Take it down a notch for me.
I feel like I should get something to eat or hum.
Let's start the show.
Yeah.
What?
Fright Day. This is episode 54. I'm your host, Byron, and tonight we celebrate the death of two things. One, a film whose life was extended for years, only to be shunned by major theater chains. Welcome to the Wake of Paranormal Activity, the Ghost Dimension.
Ugh.
And as the year comes to a close, we'd like to highlight the best things our eyes have seen, as well as things that almost put us to sleep. It's the Fright Day Top 13 of 2015. Excuse me.
You're putting yourself to sleep. Stop that.
Come on now.
Knock that off.
And in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, we'll be hearing something Kelly's calling her creepy predictions of 2016.
Yeah, you bet.
I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hey!
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
Star Wars. Good place to start in a horror podcast.
Real good.
We saw it.
Real good.
Should we talk about how we waited in line for 5 hours?
No, we should talk about how is
and not until after he married.
And then he ate her.
You guys knocked that off. Honestly, I would turn it off if I was listening to
it. No spoilers. We wouldn't spoil.
No, those are all made up spoilers and made up.
Let's talk about the things, spoiler-free, that we enjoyed about this movie.
Lead was amazing.
Okay, she jumped right in.
Well, I was going to say, I enjoyed the fact that there was a child vomiting into a popcorn bag behind Byron. And I didn't know about it until after the movie, which is weird because you were sitting right next to me. But that warmed my heart.
I could have done without that. It was a bit distracting.
I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, and I loved it. I'm actually going again to see it with my whole family on Christmas Day.
Really? Are you crying as well?
No.
Seems like you're crying.
Not more than usual.
I have to say that the whole experience was really fantastic for me because I don't know if the listeners have picked up on this, but I get really excited about things. Like, I get really, really excited.
They know.
Okay?
As Byron adjusts the levels.
And one of the things that kind of stinks sometimes is that Sam doesn't really get as excited. It was really fun with the whole Star Wars experience because Sam was as excited as I was. It wasn't like an anomaly for me because I'm that excited about most things, but he's not. So it was like this experience where we were able to be excited together. Like we did the whole waiting in line for all these hours and you came with us. It was so much fun.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
It was great.
Not expecting to be going to that.
But you did, and it was great, right?
I did. I did some work while in line.
Uh-huh. Which I was so impressed with.
Bottom line, if you have a child you're trying to expose to the wonderful world of Star Wars for the first time, make sure that the 3D glasses fit. Don't let him take them off. Don't let him kick my seat. Don't provide him with a popcorn bag to vomit in. And don't repeatedly ask him, are you sure you want to go?
Hold on. I'm going to back you up there for a second.
What?
I think that it's actually really good he gave him a popcorn bag because if he hadn't, he might have puked on your head.
No. The appropriate moment was when the kids started to get a little nauseous to escort him out of the theater, to a bathroom.
Please.
No, he was a really mean dad. That was a very selfish, mean thing.
You know what, though? The kid was mean, too. After the Civil Wars trailer, he goes, I don't want to see that.
What a little dick.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see that?
I don't know. Look,
well, it makes me sad to think about Captain America and Iron Man fighting, too, so... I mean, I don't blame
him. Whose side are you on?
Definitely Iron Man.
But he seems like he's the villain in this new movie.
Yeah, I know. I don't care. I like him a lot. I'm a Robert Downey Jr. fan.
I'm a big Bucky guy.
I had an out-of-body experience.
Winter Soldier.
With Robert Downey Jr. once.
An OBE?
Yeah.
Really?
I did.
All right.
A drug-induced OBE.
2 weeks in a row, we haven't started on horror. What do you say we roll right into it? What did you guys watch this week?
Well, Byron, you're not going to like this, but you need to stick with me for a second.
Sure.
Okay?
Right here.
So one of the things I do around the holiday season is I watch all the Christmas episodes of all the different TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Even TV shows I don't normally watch, just because it's fun. I do watch Modern Family, and I watched a Christmas episode of Modern Family. Oh. I told you were going to like it. Hold on.
Okay.
And as the episode progresses, there is a Shining theme throughout the Christmas episode of Modern Family. It was freaking fantastic. they were staying at this cabin and it was supposed to be haunted and they had the creepy twins. There were lots of really fun allusions. It was spectacular. And it even ended on like a horrifying note. It was great. It wasn't at all something that I expected, but it was a really great little horror treat in the middle of my week.
Oh God, her credibility.
It was great.
Oh no.
I'm just saying.
Can you edit that out?
I can't.
No.
That one's stuck.
I would like to talk about a film that I actually watched with Kelly. It's called The Wild Man of the Navidad.
Oh yeah.
And it was... Go. Another gem that we found on Shudder.
Fun.
Yeah. Shudder is knocking them out of the park.
Not sponsored by Shudder.
We're not at all, but
we should be.
Huge, huge fan of anybody that helps get horror to the masses in any form. Anyway, so The Wild Man of the Navidad purports to be based on the recently acquired journals of Texan Dale S. Rogers, and it debunks history books to tell the voracious, harrowing story of a rural Texas community whose residents were terrified for years by a mysterious creature inhabiting the nearby woods. This movie's from 2008, and it basically deals with this extremely rednecky part of Texas and this Bigfoot creature that terrorizes the community.
It's a BF.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it's done in the style of the 70s drive-in creature features, in particular, The Legend of Boggy Creek. It's shot with that like kind of grainy 70s exploitation lens. The characters in the movie are all really authentic type locals who you can't really tell if they're not actors who are doing a bad job of acting, or if they're really good actors who are doing a good job of acting like they're acting badly. So I don't know if they really are just locals or if they were actors. Like I said, it's really backwoodsy, redneck, very vulgar, profane, ignorant. It doesn't paint Texas in the most positive of lights, but...
Who does?
But
well,
it
a
is,
few people do.
So I really enjoyed
painters.
It. I don't know that it was ever... scary?
It wasn't.
Definitely, probably not.
If it didn't scare Kelly, probably not scary.
Yeah, but it was fun. It just reminded me so much of those old 70s kind of low budget, low production value films. They actually, in the credits, they actually thank Charles B. Pierce for his help.
Beast of Boggy Creek.
Legend of Boggy Creek.
Right.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. I would absolutely put this up there with Exists and Willow Creek in terms of really great Bigfoot movies.
Interesting. I've never heard of that at all.
Kind of flew by my radar as well. It's from IFC Films, 2008. So
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, you really need to comb Shudder.
You know, I need to comb a lot of things.
Remember how that was something we got you for your birthdays? And you should totally use it.
This is the beginning of my vacation.
Which is good.
I'm very much looking
you
forward
really
to catching
need
up
a
on
vacay.
Some horror.
Your vacation looks a lot like the rest of your work year.
It's going to be perfect. It's going to be great. So after last week's episode for Silent Night, I decided that I didn't feel right not exploring its roots. So I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night, the 1984 Christmas slasher.
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting. Christmas Eve is slowly fading. Can you hear him in the night? Close the door, turn out the light.
It's about a young man who, after witnessing his parents being murdered and his mother being raped,
we wish you Merry Christmas, we wish
you. And then being taken in by a Catholic church and being raised by them at an orphanage, the adult version of him begins to suffer some PTSD relating to the event, to which he has no knowledge of because they kept this a secret from him, but he just has like an adverse reaction to anyone dressed like Santa Claus from a young age up till now, where he's an awkward, handsome man that is tall and can move things. So he gets a job at a grocery store as a stock boy, and then on Christmas Eve, they're in need of a Santa Claus. And guess who they asked to be that Kris Kringle, that jolly old man? They asked this young man, which triggers him into being a psychopathic killer. That's pretty much this movie. You know who the killer is from square one, and he just goes around taking care of naughty people and going, naughty! Just
oh
like,
my God.
Yeah, he just has these like one word like reactions to everyone. It's kind of stupid.
How are the kills?
Kills are great. That's where I was going next. Lots of great kills and lots of really good gore. Unfortunately, I feel like it would have been more interesting if I watched this with a group of witty friends. But unfortunately, it was just me alone at my computer at 3 a.m. while I was doing some other graphic design work. So maybe not ideal situation, but I thought it was fun, and I found out that there's actually 5 Silent Night films in total, not including
wow.
the Silent Night that we watched. And I guess from here on out, I need to watch one a year. That seems only right.
One a year for the rest of your life.
I'm dying in 5 years. Is that one of Kelly's predictions?
No.
You haven't seen The Death Pool yet?
I haven't yet.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be next week.
I mean, I don't regret watching it. I regret the situation I watched it in. It's fun and stupid. It's great.
So we actually also, I don't know if we want to talk about this, we learned something about...
Oh, yeah. Why not?
About Silent Night.
We got a tweet from Stephen C. Miller regarding the fact that there was no snow in the wood chipper scene.
Which is something we commented on.
Yeah. And he said that they had snow every day of prep and it disappeared the day of... Whose phone is that?
That was mine. That was I'm really Apple sorry.
Ding. And it disappeared the day of the shoot, hence the low angle shots towards the sky, which I really appreciate him not only responding to us, but actually listening to us talk about the film.
Yeah, and I think it's cool to know little details like that about the film. Like, wow, look at some of the really, really shitty, unconquerable things that indie filmmakers have to deal with. Oh, great, a Christmas movie, and now there's no snow.
I think there was a similar situation Ted Gagan had in We Are Still Here. He mentioned that in our interview with Kelly at the Stanley Film Festival.
Yeah.
Snow's a bitch. Don't shoot in it.
Ugh.
Yeah, and a lot of times when there's too much of it, the snowmobiles are... and driving outside when you're trying to record a podcast.
Is that what's outside right now?
Yeah.
Oh, great. So I also, real quick, started Making a Murderer, that Netflix original series that everyone's been talking about.
Heard good things.
Pretty good. Being compared to The Jinx and Serial, it details the life of Stephen Avery, a Wisconsin man who served 18 years on a rape conviction, which DNA analysis later linked to another man. The documentary was filmed over a span of 10 years or something like that, where later on something happens, Kelly.
Uh-oh.
Stephen Avery gets linked to a possible murder.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, wrongfully convicted of a rape, gets out, and then now.
I wonder if that should just give you a pass, though. Like, since you had to serve time for a crime you didn't commit, then do you get a freebie?
I don't think that's true.
Do you get to say, okay, well, I get one?
I don't think you ever get one. I'm going to go ahead and be...
I mean, you're probably right.
Under no circumstances, that get-out-of-jail-free card exists only in Monopoly.
Oh.
Once again, a bit of a slow start, but now I'm pretty much all in. And I'm definitely avoiding all online news about this because I want to be surprised. I got a couple more hours of it.
That's fair.
I'll keep everyone posted on my thoughts. That's all a horror. I mean, I've just been getting ready for this year-end event of ours.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, later in the show, we're going to be talking about our favorite things.
These are a few of my favorite things.
But now, Kelly.
Yes.
Can you tell me about things that may not have already happened?
Okay, so
in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids.
Right, sorry.
And conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
54 episodes. Still not familiar with the format.
Yeah, I just get really into it. And so then, like, I'm consumed by my passion for fantastic cryptid and conspiracy news.
Well, let's share it with the people.
I will. Well, I've got a few predictions for 2016. And then I'm going to also give you guys a rundown on some of the predictions that exist among other circles. For example, the interpretation of Nostradamus's predictions, which I am still really baffled by how that works, but people interpret them. So we're going to talk about them. My predictions starting. Actually, should I start with Nostradamus or should I start with mine?
I don't know what it's better.
Well, you're both full of good predictions.
Oh,
whatever. Mock me all you want. I'm going to keep talking. Nostradamus has some interesting predictions for 2016, and I would also like to talk about a more modern-day Nostradamus who I can cite specific instances where they've been right. One of Nostradamus's predictions is supposedly that the U.S. will become bankrupt in 2016, the value of gold will go up, there will be another economic recession.
Oh, man.
It will be the 200th anniversary of the defeat of Napoleon. I'm not sure how that's a prediction because I think that's just something that's you mathematically calculate.
Well, that's a continuation of a prediction if he existed before Napoleon.
Right, right. So that one I just feel like is kind
of
cheating.
He just does like 20th anniversaries of his predictions?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean...
This is a good racket. This is kind of like being a local TV meteorologist.
Maybe it's just a slow year for Dami.
There will be unusual weather patterns, including natural cataclysms and disasters that will intensify further than they already have. Terrifying. Water will continue to rise. Well, we all know that's happening. Obama will be the last president.
What?
Yeah, apparently the who knows why, but Obama's going to be the last.
Trump's going to change it. He's going to call it something else.
Yeah, command show. There will be unusual planetary alignments. The Middle East will be on fire. Russia will finally make peace with the rest of the world. And apparently it will be the end of the world.
Oh, wait, what was that last thing?
Well, Nostradamus made an ambiguous statement that is leading some interpreters to believe that the Iraq war and invasion was the first sign of the apocalypse. And based on that timeline, this year would be the year that it ends. I would like to do some research to see if there is any year in the last century where somebody hasn't predicted that the world's going to end.
Well, yeah, but this is Nostradi.
Well, I think that interpreters kind of pull to everyone. Okay. But in the 20th century, there was a prophet born in Bulgaria. It's known as the modern day Nostradamus. Blind woman named Baba Vanga. Have you guys heard of Baba Vanga?
No.
There are some very interesting things that she actually did predict. So, for example, in the 1950s, she predicted global warming and the 2004 tsunami. Here's her quote. Cold regions will become warm and volcanoes will awaken. A huge wave will cover a big coast with peoples and towns, and everything will disappear beneath water. Shortly before she died in 1996, in 1989, she predicted the terrorist attack on the Twin Towers. Here's the statement. Horror, horror, the American brethren will fall after being attacked by the steel birds. The wolves will be howling in a bush and innocent blood will gush.
What's the...
The interpretation is that GW was the wolf howling in the bush. I don't know what that means.
Airplanes are mostly aluminum and titanium.
Mm. Okay, but that's a pretty... I mean, that's kind of an interesting statement,
good.
Don't
it's
you think?
It's a pretty good prediction.
And she also seconded Nostradamus' prediction that Obama was going to be the last U.S. president.
That's a piggyback. Can't just piggyback people.
Well, who knows? I don't even... Maybe she didn't even know who Nostradamus was. You never know.
Oh, she knew.
She was being called the modern day of Nostradamus. You usually look it up.
Yeah, she Googled it the first time someone told her that.
But she's dead now.
That's true. Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
More important predictions would be the ones that I have.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
In a few different realms. So in the realm of UFOs, I am predicting there will be very little advancement made in the way of disclosure.
No disclosure.
I don't think it's happening. At least not for like another 50 years.
That makes sense.
But I do think that there will be DNA evidence confirmed having to do with hybrids.
So you're going that far.
Mm-hmm.
No disclosure, but proof.
Right. It's going to be denied, but I think that there's going to be some viable evidence that emerges and is confirmed that proves the existence of hybrids.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a safe prediction because you can always claim that evidence was found and suppressed.
Covered
and that's
up.
Why we well, didn't hear about it. And next year you go, yeah, it happened. Right, you just didn't hear about
it. Okay, well, I'm not going to pull that though. That's dumpy. I'm not going to do that.
Why do you think we're not going to disclose?
I think it's way too much for the, not just American people, but for the world population to handle. It would just change everything. Things are so tumultuous. We can't really handle that kind of change right now.
Change. Are we getting political in this podcast?
Oh, I'm going to in a minute.
You think Trump's going to call the aliens a bunch of losers?
Well, maybe Trump will just get vaporized by an alien. That would be great. In conspiracy, since you brought it up, I think it will be revealed that Donald Trump's campaign has been fully funded by the Democratic National Party.
Ooh, fun.
And Hills is going to be in the White House. I mean, I guess not until January
of
2017.
So who is Hills?
Hills?
Hillary?
Oh, I didn't realize that you and she were on that.
We are. I mean, I don't really... Well, we're not going to get into that.
Did you email her?
I don't.
Getting political.
I don't, yeah. I do
dangerous.
Think also another prediction that has to do with disclosure is I think the EU is going to go through a lot of trouble this year and possibly fall. That actually could lend itself to some non-American disclosure. If things get less organized over there, more information might filter out.
Fun.
Yeah. So
I mean, I'm not hoping for that. But
I'm not either. But I think that could be one of the very small benefits to a very horrible thing.
I'm ambivalent.
Just hope that all my family is back from there by then. In ghosts, predicting that Sam and Kelly will discover that our house is truly haunted. And I'm also predicting that Byron is going to fall victim to Cotard syndrome.
Well, Cotard, that sounds like you're being mean.
Mm.
Do you not know what Cotard syndrome
is? I don't
know. I'm surprised. Cotard syndrome is a syndrome that leads people to believe that they're actually dead.
Well,
okay,
that is funny.
Okay, so they, and it's actually, it's a legit thing. Uh-huh. And they move around, and like this one lady went and saw a doctor and kept asking why they were trying to take her pulse because she had no pulse and she smelled like a rotting corpse, she kept telling people. And everybody's like, no, you don't, you're alive. They wouldn't listen to her. There's another woman who was really, really, really depressed, and as a corpse wandering around, decided that she really wanted to give her organs away to be kind so that she could do something to make her less depressed. And since she was dead already, she should be able to do that. And she had to be talked out of that.
That sounds a lot like just being crazy.
Yeah.
Well, possibly. There is some interesting evidence that would suggest that our obsession with horror movies might contribute to people getting Cotard syndrome. I mean, it's obviously like a psychological issue, but yeah, Fright Day might actually be spreading the disease of Cotard syndrome. So something to think about there.
And I'm your poster child.
Well, I just think that, you know, it's something that could happen. Let's be real.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
it could be a big year for me.
There was one cool instance where the person thought that they were dead and a lycanthrope.
Oh, I also remember one time when they were dead and loving it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wasn't that a Dracula?
That was a Dracula.
Yeah, I think that was a
Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen.
That would be Leslie Nielsen.
But no, seriously, the 65-year-old guy was almost dead because he refused to eat or drink and apparently thought that he was also a werewolf.
Mm-hmm. I don't buy
Pick
it.
One.
It's interesting. So that's one of my predictions. Rounding out the list, we have a couple of cryptid predictions.
Okay.
I do think that there's going to be some more widely accepted, though possibly not completely accepted, DNA evidence of Sasquatch.
You're bullish on the DNA evidence.
Yeah.
In 2016.
I just think that that's where things are moving. And that's one of the places where there is room for us to finally have some confirmation. And I do think that that is moving forward. Okay. I think that's going to happen this year sometime. And I also think that at least one cryptid is going to join the world of commonly accepted animals.
What would you prefer?
I mean, Nessie would be my fave.
Okay.
But any of them will be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So one cryptid. I think it's going to be a pretty good year, though, overall. Pretty excited, other than Byron's Cotard syndrome, that's going to be difficult to deal with.
I got to say, even if I do become Cotarded.
Oh, that's mean. That's mean.
What?
Mean.
I'm not ever going to be sad about it. I'm going to continue doing all the things I love, even if I think I'm dead.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good to hear at least.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Even if you're dead, why be sad about it?
Well, I would tend to agree with you.
Thanks.
Okay.
And thank you, Kelly, for your predictions.
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Yeah, thanks for the nonsense.
It's not nonsense. They're marked now. You watch. We're going to see what happens.
Speaking of nonsense, why don't we review a movie?
Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, let's definitely get it out of the way.
Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension.
You're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension is a 2015 American 3D found footage supernatural horror film directed by Gregory Lotkin.
Mm-hmm.
This is his directorial debut. He may be known as the man who has edited for other of these films.
And effectively murdered it.
Whoa! Save some for later. It's written by a bunch of people, including the man who was behind the taking of Deborah Logan.
Adam Robitel.
Yeah. Sam, do you want to tell everyone what this movie was about?
Yeah. Using a special camera that can see spirits, a family must protect their daughter from an evil entity with a sinister plan.
Kelly, do you want to tell the people what this film franchise has meant to you?
Well, the first Paranormal Activity was one of my favorite, remains really, one of my favorite scary movies. It terrifies me every time I think about it. And I think that I can sum up this new one by just a simple statistic that the franchise has fallen from an 83% Rotten Tomatoes rating on the first Paranormal Activity to an 11% on this one.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. A piece of me died today, Byron.
I'm already dead.
I know. So you're Cotard.
So you're in good shape.
I'm safe from the death created by this picture. I said why a lot in my head. Yeah. Outside.
Yeah.
I saw that when you were over in the corner bashing your head against the wall.
I was trying to be quiet.
No, I saw it. I didn't hear it. You were very quiet.
Why? Let's begin at the top. Why 3D?
Yeah. No, 3D was the why of this movie.
Okay.
It was a desperate plea to get more people in the theater to go see it.
The tagline is, for the first time, you will see the activity. And this reminded me of the old 3D movies where there was a huge gimmick, where you were looking through a scope or, I mean, there was something on screen that was an artificial construct to make the world appear different than it really did.
Yeah, and usually because the content is not good enough.
And that's exactly what this was. They have a magic camera that lets them see the ghost. So every time you're looking through the camera, you, like they say, you will see the activity. And you see it all the time.
Do you want to see the activity, though? Like, what's the point of seeing the activity?
They leave absolutely nothing to the reveal at all.
This is the Jaws. This is, yeah. He's right there.
And shit is jumping out of the screen at you the whole time.
The tragedy of it is the first movie was scary because they showed so little. And what they did show, they were able to make very scary because it was so much constructed in your mind. And I know that I say that over and over and over again about movies, but it really is true. Showing too much is one of the worst things that you can do.
No, but even going back to the beginning, I always mention Psycho, how Hitchcock always said your mind scares you more than what could be seen on screen.
And Hitchcock was brilliant, and he's right, and that's exactly how I view horror movies. And this one was just sacrilegious to the original intent. I mean, it showed everything in disgustingly horrible CG detail.
Well, let's give credit where credit's due. Although the CG wasn't necessary, I don't think it was terrible.
I think it was reasonably well executed.
It felt like 13 ghosts.
It was over the top, but it was ILM that did the CG. So
ILM's B team.
Maybe the B team.
Yeah, like
maybe.
You said, the shout out back where they have a 1998 iMac and three interns working on it.
The dudes were busy with Star Wars.
And perhaps it was all really cool looking in 3D, but even if it was, it doesn't matter because that wasn't what made this movie scary.
And it wasn't what the majority of the audience saw it in because it went with a new distribution plan saying that it would be on VOD 17 days after it left theaters. And major theater chains like Regal said, if you do that, we're not going to have you in our theater. And it limited the number of theaters to, I think, 1,300?
Yeah, I think around there as well.
Which is extremely low for one of these movies. Usually it's a wide release. We were unable to see this. It didn't come near us at all. It was like 5 hours away.
Yeah.
It was the closest theater.
Yeah.
And I don't understand who the audience is for this either. I mean, it seems to me squarely directed at tweens, but it has an R rating. And the only reason it has an R rating is for language, because they say,
It was a really dumb reason to have an R rating.
No
completely
boobs.
Stupid.
Nope.
No gore.
Nope.
Was the original rated R? I think
yes.
It was, because it also said, fuck, it had no boobs and no blood.
Well, I'm not concerned about what it didn't have. I'm concerned about what it did have. Oh. It took the story that had been fairly well contained, aside from the marked ones. But even the marked ones still brought us back to Katie and her family. Mm-hmm. And it expanded the world into this new family for no real reason.
I think it was a reintroduction.
They tied it all together, but it was... I can't even tell you what a disappointment the ending was.
You're talking about this film.
Yes.
When I said reintroduction, I was talking about the marked ones. I apologize.
I know. I'm just saying that they introduced a whole new family in this one. Took it down a different road that really didn't need to be traveled. There was plenty that they could have done with the storyline that already existed without bringing a whole new family and expanding the world to all these new questions and issues.
You had to explain the past five films to a completely fresh family.
Yeah.
Which was dumb.
And we had to learn it all along with them again, which honestly, I appreciated to some extent because I paid so little attention to the other ones other than the first one that I kind of needed a refresher because kind of hated the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was good to know what had happened and what was tied together.
I'm just hoping that this is one of those things where they say that they're done, but they aren't really. Because I need a different resolution to this franchise. It hurt my soul.
The important thing is it's dead. Let's hope it doesn't have cotards.
See, Kelly, the thing is like, That's fun. Word of the day. If they were to reboot it, it would be in the form of a prequel, which they've already done, right?
Well, I think they could do...
What was that part? Like part 9?
They could do a sequel with it, I think.
a sequel, but that's where we're here now. You think they're going to continue on from this story.
Or maybe they could just ignore this one.
I would
pretend that it didn't happen. Could we petition for that?
Well, it almost didn't happen.
Well,
this was originally announced in 2013, 2014, and then 2016.
And
ruined it.
And then 2015, which is really weird.
Didn't the teaser come out like 2 years ago also?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I think we watched a teaser for almost a completely different movie.
I know. That's what I was trying to think of.
Well, it was
so long
it was
ago.
Showing right after the fire, which would have been really interesting. I would have loved to see that. I'd love to see that gap between the fire and, you know, what happened to the kids during that period of time. I think that would have been great.
They abandoned it, though.
You'd mentioned something interesting about the writing on it, and it is, I feel terrible for the writers on this because they had to cobble together something out of an absolute fucking disaster of loose ends and plot holes and shit that doesn't matter. And the other ones, you'd mentioned that you actually thought Adam Robitel, they brought him in after his success with Taking of Deborah Logan,
mm-hmm.
yeah, to stitch it together into something passable.
I can't imagine the story this was before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a sad wrap up to something we used to love. And I don't blame Oren Peli at all.
No, this is out of his hands.
Well, it was still in his hands. He was an executive producer on this. But you can't blame a man who wrote a story for how much was the budget on the original?
Like $10,000 or something.
Something
wasn't it?
Maybe even lower. But he didn't think that this was going to be a franchise. So you can't blame him. You can only blame the people that added all these other elements to the dough.
Yeah, I think there's one particular organization we can blame for this.
Blame House?
Yeah, Blame House.
Okay, let's not, come on now. They had a rough go at it. This came out at the same time as that Gem and the Holograms movie that also bombed.
Yeah, and this also bombed. Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, only made roughly eight times its budget.
Yeah, about $80 million. Yeah. For an accumulative budget of $18 million for the five films, it ended up making $811 million.
Holy shit.
Jesus.
How is that possible?
Jason Blum prints his own money.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Uh-huh. And honestly, the weird thing about this is the movie cost $10 million to make, which is more than half of the cost of all of the other movies. Why? Why do this?
The thing is, the special effects, the entities, there's no reason to go to ILM for that. The absolute highest end VFX group in the industry, when you could have probably done this so much more simply in-house.
Well, and the thing is, all of the black effects were seen through a VHS camera filter. So it's almost like they had to dumb down the graphics to match the quality of this camera that they were using.
Because it was tape.
Just confusing. A lot of it's confusing.
Yeah.
Performances weren't great from anyone.
No.
Oh, I disagree. I think the girl.
Well, but okay.
The child was, and child actors can suck a lot.
She played the typical child in a child horror movie.
Yeah, but I think she did it well. I think we need to give her credit.
No, I'll give her credit. She was probably the best part of it. But all you need to do to be a scary child actress is to have a monotone voice and say spooky things.
Yeah, like Red Rum.
Sure, classic. But everyone else was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I mean, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
I don't
really.
Either.
It really depresses me. Sam, I know you didn't even like the other ones. It hurt me because I loved the other ones, and this just was horrific.
I mean, before we leave this movie, I'd like for each of us to say one nice thing about this
There
movie.
Was a scene where, I don't want to spoil anything, but there was a scene where the mother is trying to go into her daughter's bedroom and there's something standing there. And that scene I thought was very, very scary. That one was, I think, actually looking at the whole franchise, one of the scarier scenes in the franchise. It just was, unfortunately, one of the few great points in this movie.
That's a build-up jump scare where you see one thing quickly and then are startled with a noise or something happening. I thought that was an effective jump scare.
That scared me. I thought that was really good.
Great. How about you, Sam?
I would say I enjoyed that they have promised that this is the last one.
Okay.
Really,
He's trying really hard for something nice right now.
Come on,
no,
Sammy, you can do it.
There was actually something.
Okay.
I liked that there was a cult in it.
Yeah, cults are cool.
They are. I would have liked to see more of them because they're scary and CG bullshit's not.
Sure. Good one. And beside the character of Leela being rad and unsettling, I thought this was the best priest in the series. He kind of comes in at that third act, but his extermination explanation really kicked it into full gear and turned on kind of the frantic pace that I know you and I had talked about this, Kelly, that we really wanted in the entire movie, or at least more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those elements just weren't enough.
And see, I thought that whole part of it smacked of Mystery Incorporated on Scooby-Doo, setting up a plan.
Okay, but I mean, look back at my favorite parts of Oculus, where they're like, we've got three cameras on separate power sources pointed at the mirror.
So you like the Scooby-Doo?
I kind of do. I like the
getting the plan together.
Rube Goldberg kind of thing. Yeah, it's
Did
fun.
You like the A-Team?
I've never seen the A-Team. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Maybe I do. But did I like this movie? I did not.
what would you give it?
I was one of the first test audiences for the original Paranormal Activity, an interesting experience. I don't think it was necessarily a film that grabbed me from the beginning like it did Kelly. But this is just unfortunate that something that was at the top of its game could end like this in some sort of weird broken back crawl of a film. But I give it a 3.2. It's not a good movie.
I give it a 3.4.
Okay.
It broke my heart.
Incredibly low for you.
It really, really broke my heart. And in all fairness...
It's that low because you feel insulted by it.
Well, it's that low because I cared about this franchise a lot. You know, if it was a Hellraiser movie and it was this bad, I probably wouldn't rate it as low.
Probably wouldn't watch it.
Well, I would because you guys would make me.
Sure.
But it just disappointed me. It hurt me.
I am going to give this movie a 3.0. It exemplifies everything that is wrong with quasi-pseudo-pretend indie horror. They just threw a lot of money at VFX, some gimmicky 3D, had a whole team of writers, obviously no coherent vision for anything that was going to happen. Very obviously a cash grab, piggybacking on the success of Oren Peli's fantastic, genre-defining first act, Paranormal Activities. I hated this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want some of these coffin nails?
Yeah.
Here, catch.
Here.
Got it.
Ah, stay in there.
That's found footage. It's done. Thanks, Paranormal, for doing that.
Yeah.
And thank you guys for listening to us talk about it. If you've seen The Ghost Dimension, let us know your thoughts. At Frightening on Twitter, leave a comment in the show notes of this episode. Go to our Facebook page, search Frightening on Facebook. Man, what do you say we talk about some better stuff?
I need some positivity.
And really, we have a lot of good stuff to talk about here.
Let's begin the Fright Day Top 13 of 2015. And 2015 was a great year for us and horror.
I think back to all the weeks where I felt like, I was like, oh shit, I didn't watch very much. But then I look through the list of all the amazing things that we watched, and I feel pretty satisfied with our horror experience for 2015.
Yeah, this activity of putting the list together, I thought it was going to be stressful, but I found it to be quite a joy.
There were hard decisions, though.
Yeah,
there were. What we did is we all made a top 13 list and assigned point value to those, and then we added it all together, and this is our
aggregate result.
Before we get into them, I'd like to talk about a few honorable mentions that almost made our list but didn't quite get there. Deathgasm. Yeah, you guys loved it. And I liked it. I liked it. It didn't make my top list for the year, but I liked it. It was fun. Again, I liked it because Sam got excited about it.
Well,
so
start thinking for yourself.
Well, I didn't put it on my list.
Or,
I didn't think for myself.
Conversely, do exactly what I tell you all the time.
Okay.
The truest heavy metal movie I think that I've ever seen. It was handled with a wink and a nod at metalheads and kind of skewered them/us for some of our irritating quirks.
Mm-hmm.
And did so very lovingly with an incredible soundtrack and hilarious, hilarious scenes of bloody brutality wherein, you know, dildos were jammed into ears. Mm-hmm. And some other fantastic things like that. So I really liked Deathgasm.
And I don't know if you saw this, Sam, but on the Jason Lee Howden Instagram page was an image of Deathgasm 2.
I did see that.
very much looking forward
exciting.
To that.
Yeah.
What else we got?
We also have The Visit, which I think Byron and I enjoyed more than Sam.
It was my fault that one didn't make that a little higher.
That's okay. It was my fault that Deathgasm didn't. So we're even, sweetheart.
Quit fighting, you two.
I love you. The Visit was just hilarious. I was very skeptical going in because I wasn't sure Shyamalan was going to... Shyamalan?
You did great. You didn't ding dong.
Shyamalan?
It made me so happy.
Was going to pull off a genuine horror comedy, but I think he did a tremendous job.
He stepped out of his comfort zone.
He did, and he kind of hit it out of the park, in my opinion. I loved that one. And then the other one that came very close, but didn't quite make it, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Beautiful film.
It
beautiful.
Was.
I had
beautiful.
So much fun with that. Maybe not on the episode of the podcast that we recorded because Sam wasn't there, and that was kind of sad.
Oh yeah, that was
sorry
weird.
Sorry about that.
But I loved everything about it. I can't wait to see what's her name?
Anna Lily Amanpour.
Yeah, she's got that Jim Carrey cannibal western that's coming out.
The Bad Ooh, Batch.
I didn't know about that.
Oh really?
Whoa!
It should be interesting.
It will be interesting.
Isn't it the Bad Batch?
It's something like that. The Ridiculous Six. She was the director
was
of the Ridiculous Six.
Oh, the Ridiculous Six. Oh, okay.
No, stop it.
Her Twitter account is also hilarious if you're bored. It's
really
worth following. Yeah.
Oh, great. A beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. Great spaghetti western vampire flick. Check it out. I bet it's on Netflix still.
So are we ready to start our actual list, folks?
This is it.
This is
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Number 13.
The only list that matters.
Number 13. Byron, start us off.
Number 13 is The Final Girls. A movie that Sam and I saw at the Stanley Film Festival. Kelly didn't get the chance to watch it. Combines not only amazing nods towards 80s slashers, but also it's got a lot of heart.
Yeah,
it tears at you.
So many feels. There was, I would say, nary a dry eye in the audience.
The perfect love letter to horror fans. And I think it's not out on Netflix, but it's streaming now.
And I think the cut that we saw was actually R-rated.
Was it really?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of swears and
things. If it wasn't, it is exactly what PG-13 horror films should be.
Oh, totally agree.
Because it slid right through without even catching my attention. The rating, that is. The movie.
I was going to say, the movie obviously caught your attention.
Yeah,
it made
the
list.
The movie
and
is great.
I think Kelly would really enjoy this movie. I think it would play to her sensibilities.
I am excited to see it. I really am. Number 12 is on there 100% because of me.
Yeah, it's all you.
It's all my fault.
Our rating system is the best we could come up with, but
it still slid through.
So because Lost River was my number 2 film of the year, it ended up on our list as number 12. It wasn't even on Sam or Byron's list.
No.
This was one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. And I might get criticism that I'm only putting it on there because Ryan Gosling directed it, his directorial debut, I might add. That is not the case. I think Christina Hendricks is an incredible actress. I also think that Ben Mendelsohn, who I really enjoyed in another series this year, but the one that wasn't horror, so I won't discuss it. I think he's a tremendous actor. The way that the movie was assembled with a fairy tale like story and the horrific elements of a horror movie made it really enjoyable. And I think you guys really missed the boat on not including this.
I think it's borderline, dark fantasy.
Yeah, borderline not horror.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the movies that we like are borderline not horror, though.
I mean,
The Visit is.
No, The Visit's a horror film.
Well, so is this then.
That's not true. But like you said, the visuals were incredible.
It was gorgeous.
The story was cool. It had a lot of elements of like Harmony Korine films I mentioned before.
You did, yeah.
And you can definitely see the Refn.
Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yeah, his influence.
Yeah,
it's great. I can't wait to see what Gaz does next. Yeah. Honestly, I think
I liked it too. It just, I wouldn't consider it horror.
Yeah.
For number 11, we have... We Are Still Here.
Ted Gagin.
Ted Gagin's directorial debut, and he did such a fantastic job with this movie. It's a haunted house tale that is not like any haunted house tale you've seen recently. Barbara Crampton is absolutely phenomenal in the lead, and actually, as a plug, check out our interview with her on Friday.com.
Honestly, some of the best practical effects I've seen in a long time. You can definitely tell that Ted loves horror films and specifically that VHS era of the 80s. But he's not making an homage.
It stands on its own two feet well. Yeah. I think, yeah, I agree.
And I'm glad it's getting the recognition that it deserves.
And I can't wait to see what Mr. Gagin is serving up with
Satanic Panic.
Satanic Panic, yeah. Ugh.
Number 10 is The Boy. I don't have much to say about this.
I know it was a bigger hit on both Sam and my radar. I did not see it at the Stanley Film Festival, which was a huge disappointment to me, but I really enjoyed watching it with you two a few months later. I was blown away by this movie. It was one of those that didn't have ghosts or anything necessarily supernatural or conspiracy or cryptid related about it, but the acting was tremendous and the story was very, very haunting. I think this was one of those wonderful occasions on which my husband and I agreed.
And we're not talking about the 2016 version of The Boy. We're talking about the original.
We're not. The 2016 version looks like shit.
Well, it doesn't look that bad.
It looks like a haunted doll.
Okay, well.
It is a haunted doll. You're right, Sam. Yeah. Sam, you had a great time interviewing the directors and writers and Star.
And Star, yeah. We also, available on FrightDay.com, have an interview that was so much fun with directors Clay McLeod Chapman and Craig McNeil, and with the young star of this movie, Jared Breeze, who was, in my opinion, unquestionably the best young star of any horror movie that I have seen in recent memory. He absolutely killed it.
And that's saying a lot, because there's been a lot of creepy kids this year.
Yeah,
he was incredible, though. He was a whole different level. Number 9, again, though it was on both of your radars, it only made Byron's list and my list, and it just barely made Byron's list.
Yeah, just barely.
And it made the top of the list for me. This was my number one film of 2015, hashtag horror. And for me, this is a really good example of how dramatically differing opinions can exist on some of the more controversial horror pieces. And this is why you really need to experience some of these things for yourself. I'm not saying all of you are going to love this movie, but for those of you who do like it, it is an incredible experience. Kind of ignore the IMDb reviews. And if you find the premise for this one interesting at all, definitely check it out. I still can't believe that this was a directorial debut. It just blows my mind.
That's one of the things about our list, as will become increasingly clear. So many fantastic, either young filmmakers earlier in their career or debut films.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, really cool phenomenon this year.
Yeah. Well, the acting again and the storyline, just the whole atmosphere of this movie was very unique. I am very much looking forward to what Miss Subkoff has to offer with her next pieces.
Even though it didn't make my personal list, I absolutely recommend seeing this. It was a great movie.
And coming in at number 8 is Goodnight Mommy. This is kind of a polarizing pick. I've heard people have put this at their top of their list, and some people have thrown this out the top window.
Well, those people are dumb.
They're kind of dumb people. Goodnight Mommy, I originally saw it at the Stanley Film Festival, and it put me to sleep because it was so beautiful. It lulled me right into my dead sleep. But when I got a chance to watch it again, I was able to really take in the true, honest brutality of the situation and how it was very effective. They weren't cutting off limbs. They were cutting lips, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God, that was creepy.
Although the marketing was a bit confusing for some people, we went into this blind and it proved to be one of my favorite movies as well. I don't know if it made my list, but I do know that I really, really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
Like you say, the trailers were all a little possibly misleading, and that could have been part of the ad campaign's goal, but it seemed like more of an action slasher almost than it did the quieter, even more brutal piece that it turned out to be. And Susanna Woost was fantastic in it.
And the Schwartz twins.
And amazing. The Schwartz twins, yeah.
Yep.
Creepy kids. I don't know what would make horror fans happy, honestly. They complain when a trailer gives away all the scares, and then they complain when they don't get what they're expecting. I don't know.
Well, it's like any kind of art. You have to fall in a very narrow zone to be successful.
We're big pains in the ass.
We are.
Coming in at number 7 on our list is Spring from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. This is a love story for the black-hearted bastards who hate love stories with tentacles. It's just beautifully shot. They use some really innovative techniques and made the absolute most of their budget. It does not look like an indie. It's shot so perfectly. An excellent love story. The acting is all top-notch from Lou Taylor Pucci, Nadia Hilker, and they have amazing chemistry. for any movie that's even partly based on romance to make my top list,
let me tell you guys,
it's got to be pretty awesome. And,
big deal.
And it really is.
Date movie of the year.
I would say so.
It is. I keep trying to convince my parents to watch this one.
I think they'd like it.
I think they would too.
And you know what I'm looking forward to? Once again, the next project, that untitled Aleister Crowley
project.
Oh, can't wait for it. Go Crowley, go. Coming in at number six is Krampus, a very recent view for all of us. Holy cow, I love this movie.
It's an Easter movie, right?
Yeah, sure, totally. It's very hard for a mean-spirited Christmas film to make any list of things I enjoy. This movie did it so wonderfully, and while maintaining the spirit of Christmas with 100% authenticity, it was just fabulous. I can't tell everybody enough. I know Christmas is past now. You should still really consider checking this out if you can get into a theater anywhere near you. And if not, keep your eyes peeled for as soon as this one comes out, because it's absolutely worth a watch.
You know what else is absolutely worth a watch?
What?
The film that is coming in at number five, Creep.
Oh, that's a good one.
Creep is a Byron film through and through. It's a movie I saw a lot earlier than you guys that I brought to the table.
So much earlier.
Oh,
Importantly, though, this is one of the few movies that was on all three of our lists.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
For good reason. Maybe the best found footage film since Blair Witch Project.
I would say the best. Minimal POV.
Minimal cast, great director who is, honestly, he's proving himself even more so as it goes. The success of The Overnight has kind of launched him into a new place.
That's Patrick Bryce.
Patrick Bryce himself, a man that we interviewed earlier this year. And it stars Mark Duplass, one of my favorite people on the planet.
It's so uncomfortable. The performances are absolutely to die for, again, in any budget movie. And this was made for absolutely nothing.
Oh, that mask.
Every element of this movie is perfect. Shot amazingly well, exactly the way the character would be shooting it. Completely chilling.
Great one.
Number four on our list.
Speaking of chilling,
Pod by Mickey Keating. Of course I love this. It's way up on my list, and it made number four overall for Friday.
Another one that was on all three of our lists, though.
This movie is a nod to the best of sci-fi and horror sci-fi. It brings to mind the best episodes of Twilight Zone, whether Rod Serling, Richard Matheson's writing. Just absolutely pitch-perfect psychological thriller. I love this movie. Again, this is going to sound like a broken record, but director Mickey Keating also is doing phenomenal things, and we are really, really, really excited about his upcoming project, Carnage Park and Darling.
And he's got such a ferocious pace. All of these movies are coming out pretty much back to back.
It's weird. It's like he always has to have a project going that reminds me of somebody.
That's weird. I can't think of any living people.
Well, yeah, but one with Catards, perhaps.
Sure.
Yeah.
Lauren Ashley Carter, Brian Morvan, and Dean Cates all deserve big hats off for their performances in Pod.
Terrifying.
Yes.
Sound design as well. Amazing element of this film.
And Larry Fessenden.
Oh, the good old Fess. Stepping
He's great.
In.
So coming in actually at number two, because we had a tie
for
second
two.
Place. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the first one. You guys talk about the second one.
You got it.
I'm going to throw in there just to continue with my input. These last three films are on all of our lists. So
good.
The top five that came in were shared between all of us. So
that's good to know.
Slightly different orders, but they were on all of our lists. Tied for second place is What We Do in the Shadows, the funniest movie that I saw in 2015,
maybe
without a doubt.
Maybe the funniest movie of all time.
Yeah, of all time.
It was absolutely fantastic.
It's Monty Python funny.
I have no words to express how excited I am about the sequel to this one. I am hoping that it's going to come out in 2016, though I haven't seen a release date for it yet. I bet it'll be 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a tremendous effort by a comedic group.
Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi may be the two funniest people on the planet.
Well, especially together. And this story was a hilarious blend of the real world and vampires and werewolves.
And they respect the lore.
They do. They do. It was very, very respectful of traditional folklore surrounding vampires.
Which includes complete disdain for Twilight.
That is part of the traditional lore as well. So, yay, What We Do in the Shadows. Hopefully most of you have seen that by now, but if not, heavens.
What is wrong with you?
It is, oh God, you will find yourself quoting that movie until your friends hate you.
Yes.
And also tied for second place, this is going to be interesting, a little Western cannibal flick named Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tea.
I can't imagine cast better than this. A Matthew Fox, resurrect him from his lost grave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's true.
You take Patrick Wilson and remove him from his supernatural world.
Yeah.
And give him something like this.
Yeah.
Cannibals.
And then you put Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
And Richard Jenkins, who I wanted to hug.
Oh, I still want to hug him.
And you even get a bit by...
Sid Haig.
Oh, by Mr.
Right.
Sid Haig.
Oh, right. A gentleman we talked to earlier this year.
Yeah.
Debatably horror, but I'll give the last 20 minutes horror.
It's. I'd say it's genre crossing leading up to a pretty horrific conclusion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a wonderful blend of The Descent and Tombstone.
This is it, guys. There's number only one movie that this could be.
Hi, what could it be?
It's weird. I haven't seen this on anybody else's top list. You guys, we are pretty unique with this one.
Groundbreaking here at Friday.
Coming in at number one, It Follows.
It certainly does.
It was great.
What can you say about It Follows that hasn't been said a million times by anyone?
David Robert Mitchell's surreal vision of a sexually transmitted shape-shifting nightmare stalking teenagers through a dystopian Detroit earns not only the top spot for 2015, but it is destined for the pantheon of the genre's all-time best.
See, this is why Sam needs to write more for us.
What the fuck?
I know. What the fuck exactly?
Honestly.
It's been too long since you had that feeling that you get from your favorite horror movies, whether it's Halloween or Scream or Blair Witch, that feeling where you are completely transported into a horrific alternate universe with something stalking you. I can't encourage you enough to watch It Follows or watch It Follows again.
Believe the hype.
It's absolutely, every word is true. Except what Quentin Tarantino said. That's not true.
I mean, Quentin needs to chill.
He does.
Quentin's just angry at everybody right now. Just leave him be.
And those are the best films of 2015.
According to Fright Day.
And that counts as objectively.
So I wrote down a couple things, not quite horror shout outs that I'd like to give. I don't know if you guys have anything to add. The Gift.
Yeah, I actually had it on my list, but then you pointed out that it really wasn't horror. Not quite, and that's
horror.
Probably true.
Amazing film.
Very
so much,
tense movie.
So Joel, much tension.
Well, and Joel Edgerton as both an, well, I guess, actor, director, and writer.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. That's a talented man we got there.
Oh, God, yeah. And for the budget.
Top marks on all three roles.
Yeah.
A movie, I think I'm the only one that saw Turbo Kid.
We still need to see that.
You have to see it.
I know Sam's going to love it.
Beautifully shot. It's Mad Max on BMX bikes. Super quirky. It's a blast. Can't end this conversation without talking about Ex Machina.
So good.
Yeah.
With Poe Dameron.
You got Poe and you got that guy leading that rally. What was his name? In Star Wars?
Oh, in Star Wars. Oh, leading the rally. Yeah.
That's him. That's the guy from Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
You really didn't know that?
No, I really didn't know that.
He's a shape-shifting man.
Huh.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
Yeah.
Poe?
Poe's in it. And then the guy from Ex Machina is also one of the bad guy leaders. He's the redheaded that's a
Hux.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Okay, come on now. Let's keep it going.
Wow.
Sorry, that just blew my mind.
We don't want to dwell on this, but there were a few things that let us down this year.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah.
Topping my list was a movie that I was very much looking forward to, directed by Adam Green. We talked about it for like 6 weeks straight at the beginning of the year. Digging Up the Marrow.
Could have been better. Could have been a lot better.
Could have been a little bit better. Ray Wise killed it.
Yeah.
He did.
And a movie that I know we were probably going to cover on this show, but basically ignored, The Green Inferno.
Yeah.
Well, once I heard how bad it was.
You've told us. We haven't seen it, but you said it was bad.
Yeah, and check out Knock Knock one more time.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that again.
Okay.
Anything on your list?
The Nightmare is, interestingly, one that I didn't like at all. It topped a lot of people's lists this year, though, so I feel like still we might not have been getting something, you guys, but that one was a disappointment to me. It felt like a confused cluster, but maybe my brain was just a confused cluster when I watched it. I don't know. I didn't dig it.
We're pretty tired.
Yeah.
I am with Kelly on The Nightmare. I think it's one of the most overrated movies of the year. It made absolutely no sense. It was like a bad episode of The Haunting of. And primarily, I was let down by Muck, because Muck was the worst movie that literally has ever been made.
Sure.
Literally Agreed. Ever been made. And
it was on my movies to watch list last year.
It didn't seem like it was the worst movie ever made, but it turned out that way. So.
Oh, it sure did. It sure
anyway,
did.
Enough of that negativity.
Well, yeah.
I know two more real quick, and they were both theatrical films, and they were
You're going to say Lazarus
Effect. I am going to say Lazarus Effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, starring one of my favorite people on the planet, Mark Duplass.
Yeah, and didn't let me down.
Really?
You I was fine time? With it.
Was it on your top 13?
No, but it was fine. It was good.
I don't know.
Duplass was good, isn't it?
Duplass killed it, and Donald Glover was killed, but also killed. Last movie that I'd like to talk about, a film whose trailer really grabbed me, The Gallows.
Oh, yeah. You guys hated that one.
Yeah, not a fun movie.
I had zero expectations, and I was rewarded for that.
Yeah. Well, 2015 would be a real hard year to beat, but let me tell you guys, there is some stuff in 2016 that's looking pretty incredible.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So as I did last year, I'm going to release a whole article on this that's got it broken down into indie and big theatrical releases. But just a few of the highlights that are on my radar: The Conjuring 2, The Enfield Poltergeist.
That would be.
Very yeah. excited about. Mm. Purge 3.
Okay.
Rings, which seems kind of like a sequel / reboot.
It's still kind of been up in the air, though. I haven't heard yeah. anything about this.
It has a release date, April 1st. So we'll see. The Forest, which is coming out very quickly. Very excited about that. The Witch.
The Witch.
Mm-hmm. Amityville, The Awakening. Okay, which you're actually
just cruising right through The Witch. I've got to say.
Sorry.
The Witch looks unreal.
It looks amazing.
I've heard really cool things. It looks amazing. It's apparently like fully period. Like no modern dialogue.
That's going to be tough for you.
It's going to be great.
I do not understand accents. You're right.
You struggle with that.
I do, but I'm really looking forward to The Witch.
Amityville, The Awakening was one that
can't be on your list.
Well, it was on my list last year.
It looks like a pile of shit.
I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be interesting.
They pushed it back. It had a theatrical release this year, and they're like,
give it a break.
Never mind.
So have you guys heard about Leatherface?
I have.
That one is rumored. It doesn't have a release date yet, but people are talking that it's going to come out in 2016. People are also talking about The Blob, a remake of one of my favorite old school horror movies. So that could be really, really fun.
I didn't hear anything about The Blob.
Check it out. Do your research.
Is that the list of your majors?
Those are my majors. Here's some minors.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say minor, actually. These are just indies.
Some major smalls.
Yeah. Martyrs.
Martyrs.
On there for Byron.
You're looking forward to it?
I'm not.
I have to say.
But I have to talk to our audience, and I know some of our audience will be.
I have to say, I'm not necessarily looking forward to it, but I know that we are going to be covering it in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and I'm just going to judge it when I see it.
The Greasy Strangler?
I've never heard of The Greasy Strangler.
Yes, you have.
You have too.
What's The Greasy Strangler?
It's a Spectrevision release about a father and son who are weird tour guides.
Oh, I actually don't know much about this, but
Ann Campion is producing.
The people behind The Boys.
It's going to be really cool.
The production companies. Spectrevision. Elijah Wood. And
I guess I'll have to see. I honestly can't remember anything about that.
Intruders.
Intruders, another film that we're going to be covering.
We
just posted the trailer to that at frightday.com.
We did indeed. Carnage Park, which I believe we talked about earlier.
Yeah, Mickey Keating's flick.
Absolutely.
Oh, that stars Pat Healy, too.
It does.
Oh,
it
man. Does.
31.
Which is the new film by Robert Zombie.
Which is still, despite two efforts at cutting it, at a NC-17.
Ugh.
Neon Demon.
Okay.
Nicholas Refn.
It's his debut in horror.
Yeah, very excited about that. And then another one, have you guys heard about Black Wake?
I haven't heard a thing about Black Wake.
So it does have Tom Sizemore, so I'm not sure what that's going to mean for it. But listen to this. Specialists gather in a top secret facility to investigate a series of strange deaths on beaches along the Atlantic Ocean. Hmm. One of the team's scientists examines video evidence to uncover a possible parasitic explanation for the fatalities. But when a determined detective, played by Tom Sizemore, sends her the crazed writings of a mysterious homeless man, the scientist slowly learns that the actual threat may be more dangerous and far older than anyone ever imagined. Can she convince her colleagues, led by Eric Roberts, of all the true danger before an ancient force rises from the sea to bring madness and death to all of humanity? So I'm getting kind of a Sharknado vibe from this.
It's like Sharknado meets Cthulhu.
Yeah, so I think that one could be really fun.
Is it, though?
I think bad.
I think it's probably a bad film. A movie that may not be on your radar that's coming up, The Mind's Eye. Have you heard much about this?
Yes.
Lauren Ashley Carter, and it's directed by Joe Bigos.
Yep.
And he was the guy that did that alien movie, Almost Human, that we watched. I know Kelly wasn't a huge fan, but I'm a huge fan of his work and of Lauren Ashley Carter.
I believe Brian Morvan's in that also.
I think so. And so is Larry Fessenden. He's all over the place. One more I'd like to add is a film that everyone's been talking about called Green Room. Have you heard anything about
that? That's actually on my list too. Yep.
Everyone's been talking about this on the festival circuit. I don't know much about it other than it's about a punk band that finds themselves playing like a skinhead bar And then when they go to the green room, they get in a situation that they cannot get out of. That's all that they're teasing.
Sounds like
this.
A Sam movie.
I think it's going to be a Sam movie.
I don't know. It sounds torture porny.
It might be. We'll see. I don't think they do torture porn movies anymore, do they?
No, I'm over it, so I hope they don't.
Is there anything on your list, Sam?
Yeah, I would. Well, I mean, you guys have done a very thorough job, I think. I am really excited for 31, of course, Rob Zombie.
Gotta be.
Darling from Mickey Keating. Super excited for that. Carnage Park mentioned already.
Another Keating.
Yeah, and The Bad Batch from
Anna
Willey.
You've gotta be Keating me.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
And The Bad Batch from Anna Lily Amirpour.
That's going to be great. Do you have any more details about that one?
It's billed as a dystopian love story in a Texas wasteland and set in a community of cannibals.
Fun.
And it's starring Jason Momoa, Keanu Reeves, and Jim Carrey.
So Reeves and Carrey.
And super Giovanni fun. Ribisi.
Oh, man.
Diego Luna.
Wow.
She's got clout.
Yeah. She wow. does. I didn't realize that that was the cast. I'm even more excited now.
Yeah. Wow. Should be a good time.
Good year coming up, guys. Good year we just closed. Good year coming up.
And we're going to be right here with you talking about all the films.
You bet.
And sometimes writing stuff, too.
Yeah. And doing cryptids and conspiracies. Don't forget that, guys.
Sure. And this year, we are going to be launching your little Sarn thing, huh?
We are.
What is that called?
Kelly's Eerie Expeditions.
That's going to be fun. And we've got some secrets. We're going to be sharing a little bit more about that in the next couple of weeks. But more importantly, we just want to say thank you guys for spending the year with us.
Thank you so much. You guys are amazing.
Thank you for making it a great first year.
And we promise to keep working hard for you in 2016.
I'm not going to work that hard.
I'm going to continue at the rate I am.
I'm going to work harder.
Sure.
That sounds like it'll all even out.
If you enjoy the show, help us out. Go to iTunes, leave us a review, and in return, we'll send you some pins and maybe some handwritten spook curses.
Ooh, yeah.
Once you leave a review, email contact@frightday.com. You know, that's all I got today.
Yeah.
I got no more plugs. I appreciate all of the orders for the holiday season. I hope that you're wearing them right now while you're listening
Take
to
pictures,
this program.
Take pictures. Send us.
Yeah. At Frightday on Twitter or just the email address, contact@frightday.com. We'd love to see you in those shirts.
The email address works now.
It does.
There's a contact button on the website, frightday.com, that actually works.
And we've gotten some really cool ghost stories from you guys. Keep sending them to Kelly.
I got
Kelly.
A really, really good one this
yeah.
week.
Yeah. Kelly@frightday.com. Feel free to tweet me @KellyFrightday.
Sam, where can we find you on the internet?
Sam@frightday.com or tweeting @SamFrightday.
And I'm @ByronMcCoy. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And I guarantee you this year, there's going to be probably 50 times more serial killer talk on this show.
Oh.
And until next Frightday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Happy New Year!